Call the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 5th, 2024. Let the record reflect the time is 3:17 p.m. Today we have present Representative Sadler, Representative Prox, Representative Wright, Representative Fields, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff that will be assisting us today are Kevin Allen with House Records, Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and Clark Bickford, my staff and committee aide to House Labor and Commerce. Today in committee we have four items on the agenda, starting with public testimony on Governor Dunleavy's Executive Order Number 135, which would eliminate the Alaska Safety Advisory Council. I'm now going to open public testimony on Executive Order 135. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Please approach, put your name on the record, and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. For the record, my name is Elaine Banda. I am the Chief of Alaska Occupational Safety and Health, the Consultation and Training Section for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Chair Sumner and members of the committee, I am here today as a representative in support of the Executive Order 135, which will transfer duties of the Alaska Safety Advisory Council, commonly known as ASAC, to the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Currently, our state does not have a safety and health plan, and many of the ASAC duties have gone unfulfilled for many years. This transition to the state will ensure that an entity is held responsible for the safety and health of Alaskans. I look forward to invited testimony and answering any questions at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Fields?
Thank you through the chair. Ms. Banda, could you tell us how many companies, individuals have been involved with planning the ASAC Governor's Safety Conference over the last few years? Do you have a sense of kind of how large that group has been?
Oh, absolutely. I've been a member of the Governor's Safety and Health Committee since 2012, and I was appointed to the ASAC Council in 2020. The conference usually has about a good 8 to 9 strong volunteers with assistance from people like me with the state. So that is one duty that the ASAC is responsible for doing. One of 16 other duties. So of the 16 other duties, 15 of them have not been fulfilled for many years because the conference takes a lot of work, and it's sponsored by a lot of volunteers who work full-time jobs.
Yeah. Thanks, through the chair. If I could just ask a follow-up. For people who haven't been to the conference before, could you share how it highlights safety innovations, best practices, sort of exemplary safety culture in different companies?
Oh, yes. So just to give you an update, so we're going to have the Governor Safety and Health Conference this year, April 2nd and 3rd. Everyone is invited. Every year, the conference, it highlights those activities from different industries in the safety field, different businesses who take part in helping keep Alaskans safe. We have lots of recognition for employers who go above and beyond to create ideas to help keep their employees safe. We look at, I'm trying not to use acronyms, but we look at things like how many people don't get hurt on a job, you know, because when a person gets hurt on a job, depending on that type of injury or illness, it's either recorded or it's reported. And there are some businesses who have very few recordable or reportable injuries. Currently, there's no entity that tracks that type of information. We have the conference and we recognize them, but we don't have an entity that is looking at. Now my program, consultation and training, we go out and we do presentations, we train, but we don't keep record. And that's what this transferring of these duties would allow an entity to keep records. Good questions.
Can I ask a follow-up to that?
Oh, so, for the record.
So through the chair, Ms. Banda, is it your intention then that if the legislature chose to sort of not overturn this EO, that all the functions of the Governor's Safety Conference and the planning and support for industry would be done through your office, through the Office of Consultation, and that the event and kind of highlighting safety culture could all be done in the same way?
So, for the record or through the chair, it's still being worked out, but let me just say it's not guaranteed that it's going to go through the consultation and training. We do, so right now, ASAC, the Alaska Advisory Safety Council, is housed under the Division of Labor Standard Safety. So I envision that when it's transferred, the duties are transferred, it may not go to my section, but it will still be within the Department of Labor, the later standards and safety. That's how I see it. And right now they're looking at most likely two positions, but we would still have volunteers and we would still have the Governor Safety and Health Conference, but we would work to fulfill those other duties that have not been fulfilled.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Ms. Banda, you said two positions.
We're looking at...
So is it the case that pulling back the ASAC's duties to Department of Labor would necessitate the addition of two positions, is what you said?
Correct. But we would still have... We would still need volunteers. So two positions to make sure the duties and responsibilities are being carried forward. But we would still have volunteers to help with some things like putting on the conference, helping to build a safety and health plan for Alaskans, which we currently don't have.
Follow up? Thank you. Ms. Vanda, do you have any, through the chair, any idea what level those positions would be? And the secondary question would be, where would you anticipate these volunteers coming from to help put on the conference?
Oh, through the chair. What was your first question?
First question is, what level would the two positions, two PCNs, who would they need to be, or what level?
Through the chair, we would be looking at most likely a liaison, which probably arranged 21 or 22, and a project assistant or project coordinator, which would be arranged 16 to 18. Through the chair, we're looking at funding for these two positions, roughly around $260,000, and I do have a breakout of what that would include. So through the chair, we would be looking at personal services for funding these positions, travel. So we don't just service Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks. We look at the totality of Alaska. So we have to get to places like rural Alaska, Nome, Bethel, Ukiavik. So there are travel expenses, service expenses. So we would have to pay for an office. We have to pay for office space, things like computers, printers, and then commodities, which would be the paper and pens and pencils. So we're looking at roughly 263,000 to fund two positions with the support of free volunteers. So
thank you, Representative Prox.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Through the chair, how does your program interface with the workers' comp division?
My current program, it does not.
And follow up?
Oh, through the chair, consultation and training does not, I don't have any affiliation with the workers' comp program.
Follow up? Yes, through the chair. Is there some thought of doing that? The reason I'm asking is there's the human suffering element of this, but then for the companies that have to pay workers' compensation insurance, if they were putting more effort into reducing accidents in the first place, they're going to save money.
All right.
Seems like synergy.
Through the chair. We don't have consultation and training. So this is apart from ASAC, apart from what we're talking about here. So my program is 90% funded from federal government or by federal government. And all of our duties and responsibilities are in alignment with reducing accidents for workers. But we are limited to only employees. So when we're talking about ASAC, there's no limitation there. You don't have to be an employee. My program, not only does it only deal with workers, but I am limited to small businesses. So my funding is only, it only lets us work with majority small businesses. So we don't work with big businesses who can afford to pay for our services. We're more about the small employer who can't afford to pay for our services. And all of our services are free to those small business people, small business owners. So we don't have a role with workers' comp. Our goal is to get it to prevent accidents so that people aren't filing for workers' comp claims.
Thank you.
Now, we do, through the chair, my program, we keep track of how many employers we see, how many trainings we do every year. Our funding is crucial to make sure that we are serving Alaskans.
Thank you. And we are going to have a future hearing with invited testimony. So we'll continue seeing no one online. Back to the room. Is there anybody else that wishes to offer public testimony on this executive order? Okay, seeing no one else, we will close public testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And as I stated, we were going to set this aside for a future hearing where we will have invited testimony and a chance for members to ask questions. Next on the agenda, we have House Bill 251, a bill from Representative Rauscher. I'm going to ask Representative Rauscher and his staff, Ryan McKee, to please approach the committee, put your names on the record, and begin. Oh, brief at ease. The record. So to reiterate, next we have House Bill 251, a bill by Representative Rauscher. I'm going to ask Representative Rauscher and his staff, Ryan McKee, to please approach the committee, put your name on the record, and begin. And we also have online for questions Commissioner Emma Pokin and Deputy Commissioner Christina Carpenter. Oh, Representative Rauscher, if you want to begin. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Representative George Rauscher, District 9, and House Bill 251. I want to thank the Chair Sumner and the committee for hearing House Bill 251. House Bill 251 will help promote food security in Alaska. Alaska's food supply is fragile, with the overwhelming majority having to be imported from out of state. Currently, there is a huge lack of homegrown food industries, which creates a strain on local communities across the state. HB 251 will allow a producer to sell homegrown and or farmed local food products to an informed end consumer and allow consumers to purchase meat if it complies with the animal share agreements directly from ranches. Passing HB 251 will help put food on the tables of Alaskans and help increase our food security here in Alaska. As basic 90,000 foot view, this is taking a look at some of the regulations that are going to be in place, some of them that might be in place now, and actually allowing them to become statute. I'm going to turn this over to my chief of staff, Ryan McKee, who will go through a sectional for you.
For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative George Rauscher. Section 1 amends AS 1720 to create a new title, or a new article titled Homemade Food Animal Shares, consisting of four new sections. First, we have AS 1720-332, which creates an exemption for the purchase and sale of homemade food products for home consumption and provides applicable restrictions or limitations on transaction requirements, food ingredients, and labeling or signage requirements. AS 1720-334 establishes conditions and requirements of animal share operations in statute, which would allow the sharing of meat and meat products by individuals participating in a herd share agreement. AS 1720-336 contains clarifications to the bill, including that the department retains its investigative and regulatory powers, and the bill does not change state requirements for brand or animal health inspection. The state agencies may provide assistance, consultation, or guidance at the request of the producer. That the bill should not be construed as more restrictive than applicable federal requirements, and the bill does not affect any federal or local laws. And then finally, AS 1720-338 contains definitions applicable to 1720-332 through 1720-338. And then we also have a couple people online, like you stated, for questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Okay, are there any questions? Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, just curious, did you look at other states and how they try to support local food, including meat production? Kind of what are the range of options that you looked at as preparing this particular legislation?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher to Representative Fields. We were looking at Alaska and what we'd like to see happen in Alaska. I'm going to be honest with you, there was no comparison on the outside there.
Okay. Could I ask a follow-up? Thanks to the chair, could you provide a little more detail on meat? Does this limit kind of direct meat purchases to a herd share, or is it a little more flexible than that?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, I'd really like to see, we have the USDA plants all over. There's three of them in the state of Alaska, I believe. And I think if Alaska needs to take a serious look at, should something happen which divides us away from lower 48, whether it be, it sounds simple, but as simple as shipping, which could be, over by boat or by truck or by airplane or a combination thereof. We had COVID that we're able to take a look at inspecting for ourselves, because I think that's one of the key things that we actually need to take a look at. And we're hoping some of the discussion here going forward will allow us to actually think about those principles as well. I don't know whether that actually answered your question, but that's some of the things that we'd like to see here. Most of it has got to do with herd share for meat. We also like to see it expand for poultry. kind of thing.
I guess through the chair, I was just trying to figure out, does this limit it to a herd share, or does this allow, say, someone with cattle to go buy 10 pounds of locally produced ground beef that didn't go through a USDA slaughterhouse, if that makes sense? Does it allow the more flexible, I can just buy however much meat I want without entering into a herd share earlier?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, Representative Fields, it is the herd share.
Any other questions? No? Oh, Representative Fox.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Through the chair to Rep. Rauscher or whomever, I'm looking at page 4, line 24, relationship to other laws. It says the department may, as authorized, conduct inspections to investigate reports. Does that limit them to... they receive a report of somebody selling, what do they call it, adulterated or?
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, Representative Prox, we're going to go for a lifeline.
So we have Emma Pokin online. You could address the representative's question. That would be appreciated. And please put your name on the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon. This is Emma Pokan from the Department of Environmental Conservation. So I understood that the question was around the department's inspection authority and under what circumstances that could be exercised under this bill. Is that a correct summary of the question, or was it something a little different?
That sounds about right.
I'm going to defer the question to Deputy Commissioner Christina Carpenter, if I may.
Yeah, so for the record, my name is Christina Carpenter. I'm the DEC Deputy Commissioner. And that's correct. On page 4, line 24, that does limit DEC's inspection authority to conduct investigations for... unsafe sanitary practices or foodborne illness or suspected foodborne illness outbreaks.
Okay. Just to be sure, it doesn't authorize the DEC to start an investigation without a report. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, that is my understanding of the bill.
Okay, thank you.
I suppose I would ask, would it allow DEC to self-generate a report and then begin the investigation?
This is, for the record, Commissioner Emma Pokan from DEC. I think as a general principle, absent a report from an interested party, we likely wouldn't have reason to know that there was something to investigate.
Representative Sadler?
Thank you. Through the chair to the sponsor, I've got a question which may be a simple misunderstanding on my part, but it appears to me, at least in my reading, that Section 1 says that production sale of food is exempt from labeling. And paragraph 2, it says the sale of homemade food may not involve the purchase or sale of meat or meat products. I'm not quite sure if I'm reading this wrong, but it sounds to me like the purpose of the bill is to allow the sale of meat products and other things. It could just be a drafting thing. I'm not catching.
Representative through Chair Sumner, Representative Sadler, I'm still going to let the DEC speak in regards to this. Okay.
Commissioner Designee Pokin, did you hear the question?
I'd like to say that the title really, I don't like the title, so I just thought it was way out of line, but that's just my own personal opinion, and I don't know how to fix that at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Did
for the record.
No. Go ahead.
For
For the record, this is Christina Carpenter, DEC Deputy Commissioner again. It's my understanding that the first section of the bill is specific to homemade food products. So those would be things that are made in a home kitchen and made offered for sale to the public. And then separately, there's a section specific to animal shares through an animal share program or herd share program. So the two sections do separate things.
Okay, thank you. Okay, seeing no other questions, we're going to set this bill aside for a future hearing. Thank you to the sponsor, Representative Rauscher, and staff for bringing this.
Thank you, Chairman Sumner.
Thank you. Now we have a bill from Representative Prox, House Bill 237, Temporary Permit for Nurse License. This is a first bill hearing. It is my intent to hear the bill and hold it for a future meeting. I'm going to ask Representative Prox and his staff to please approach the committee, put your name on the record, and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Representative Prox. I represent District 33, North Pole. And I want to thank you and the members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee for taking the time to hear House Bill 37, an act relating to temporary permits for nurses with lapsed license. House Bill 237 simply amends AS08.68.210 to allow the Board of Nursing to issue a temporary permit to a person applying for reinstatement of a lapsed license, as long as a person meets the same requirements as a person applying for license by examination. Now, a person with a lapsed Alaska nursing license is a person that has met all of Alaska's nurse licensing requirements back when they first applied, and those seeking license reinstatement go through the same licensing steps as a person applying for an Alaska nursing license for the first time, though the license through the license by examination process. And for this reason, it poses no greater risk to the public to issue a temporary permit to practice to a person seeking license reinstatement than it is to issue a temporary permit to a person applying for an Alaska nursing license for the first time. The public interest in having more nurses actively practicing their profession in Alaska is served by issuing a temporary permit to practice in either case. There's a broad consensus that Alaskans are currently suffering the consequences of a shortage of actively practicing nurses, so I encourage passage of HB 237 as quickly as possible.
Okay, thank you, Representative Prox. Are there any questions? Representative Sadler.
Through the chair, Representative Prox, you suggested we ought to pass this bill stat?
This afternoon, if we could, yes, right.
Hey, thank you. Is there a motion? No, okay. All right. Yeah. Seeing no other questions, we will set this bill aside, but we will schedule a future hearing with public testimony. And thank you, Representative Prox.
Thank you, Chair Sumner.
Last on the agenda today, we have House Bill 289, a bill from House Rules by request of the governor. I guess a bill proposing to double the tax on all businesses in Alaska. I'd like to invite Commissioner Sandy and Director Rob to approach the committee table. Put your names on the record and please begin.
Presentation's up.
Good afternoon. Chairman Sumner and committee members, I appreciate being able to be in front of you today to introduce House Bill 289. I'm joined by my colleague, the Division Director for the Division of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licensing. Before I hand it off to her to further explain this bill, I just wanted to first introduce myself as the Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development for the state of Alaska, and provide some context about the intention for the use of these funds if the legislature chooses to pass this bill. This bill would return business license fees to the amount that they were in 2008 and prior. So as the Commissioner of Commerce, I have the opportunity to serve on many boards and state boards and others. And in that time, while we joke about the amount of boards I'm on, the reality is it's not only a tremendous honor for me to serve on those boards, but I'm always so impressed by, first of all the things that I still have to learn, and by the volunteers who choose to serve our state, but also just specifically the ASME board, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, that board of directors, and the Alaska Tourism Industry Board are two boards that I serve on, and frankly served as really the inspiration in terms of what these two very high functioning boards can do as they look toward their mission and their goal of marketing to very specific and different industries. But what always impressed me about serving alongside these board members is they're not just marketing those industries, they're really marketing Alaska. And that gave me a lot of inspiration. But the other thing was, as the Commissioner of Commerce, I also have the opportunity and the honor to be able to serve what my boss, the governor's priorities are. And one of those things that he's made so clear since I took the position was in meeting with small businesses or businesses across the state of Alaska and finding out from those individuals what it is they need to serve Alaska and to continue to do business or do more business in Alaska. So as in the last couple of years since I've been in this position, as I've met with individual business owners in a variety of ways, the chamber in Fairbanks or open house meetings in Anchorage. In Kenai, we hosted a business leaders forum. So as individually, I meet with them across the state. And as I listen to those individuals, what was really clear, in addition to the things that are really, I'm sure all of you have heard from your constituents, workforce, housing, childcare, high energy costs. Those are things that are absolutely in the forefront of what we think about as we're trying to help move the economy forward. But another very clear need was, how do we tell our story better? And bringing it back to ASME and ATIA, those two industries have a mechanism in which they can tell their story. And the other industries collectively don't have that same ability. And so that was one thing that really was highlighted to us. And so as we sort of turned that and thought about that need and how we could try to help fill that need, we also really recognized, you know, when I took this position, one thing that I think I said in my confirmation hearings was, I am not a proponent of building or growing government for the sake of growing government. And so one thing I really challenged my team with as we weighed this need was, how would we try to help fund this within our own department? What could we do to help cover this cost rather than coming before you guys and asking for funds from the general fund? And so that was a really great way. We looked at the costs of business licenses in other states, and then we also just looked at our historical costs. And so that's why we really frame this as returning the cost of the fees to the cost before 2008. So with all of that, I'm going to tee it up for my partner in crime, Director Rob.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sylvan Robb, the Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing at the Department of Commerce. And as the Commissioner noted, in front of you, you have HB 289. Do a little scrolling today. And what this bill does is very simple. It simply returns business license fees to the level they were at in 2008, which takes them from $50 to $100. It maintains the 50% reduction of the general cost of a business license for any entity that is a sole proprietorship owned by either a disabled veteran or a senior who's 65 or older. So those fees would increase from $25 to $50. And then it does increase the amount of a tobacco endorsement. That's currently $100, and that would increase to $200 per renewal. So the commissioner just spoke much more eloquently than I could about why we need to increase these fees. But for the committee's information, currently the excess funds generated through the business licensing fees flow into the general fund. That would also be the case for the increase in these fees. And increasing the fee in business licensing is a way to generate that revenue that really falls on a broad swath of the population and not on any particular industry or profession. So we're not hitting anyone too hard.
I can wait. We'll take questions at the end.
And so just in case folks are not familiar, when you do need a business license in Alaska, if you're engaging in business in the state of Alaska, you do need to have a business license. You do not need to have a physical footprint in the state in order to require a business license. If you are conducting business in the state, you do need to get a business license. And then an endorsement is required for anyone who wishes to sell products containing tobacco, electronic smoking products, or products containing nicotine. Moving on to slide five, there are a number of exceptions to when a business license is required. They are not required for fisheries businesses, businesses selling alcohol, so bars, they're licensed under another aspect of the Department of Commerce, insurance businesses, mining businesses. Of course, employees don't need to have a business license, and then banks and credit unions are licensed by our Division of Banking and Securities. Finally, the one I want to draw your attention to is in the middle there, the furnishing goods or services by a person who doesn't do this on a regular basis. And that's the exception that allows, you know, for lemonade stands, a garage sale, even would allow someone who was you know, maybe making crafts and wanted to see if it was something that the public would be interested in. It gives them a chance to get out there and try that without having to purchase a business license to see if whatever they're making is something the public would be interested in purchasing. So we have a number of slides about the number of business license and endorsements from 2014 through the last fiscal year, 2023. You can see the actual figures down there on the bottom because I know those endorsement chunks of the bars are so small, they're very hard to see. But you can see that business licenses have continued to increase over time. You may be looking at that number of business licenses, 22,623 for last year, and remembering the division talking about having 100,000 licensed businesses. It is possible for entities to purchase a business license for 2 years at a time, and so that's how many folks purchased a business license in that particular year, but it's not the number of licensed businesses in Alaska. Moving on to slide seven, here you'll see the number of businesses with licenses who also hold endorsements. And again, I know this is a little bit faint and hard to see, so we won't spend a lot of time on it, but I'm happy to answer any questions. Here on slide eight, you can just see the number of business licenses who hold endorsements. You will notice those light blue bars, that's the number of business licenses that have an endorsement attached. The darker blue bars are the number of endorsements. Each location that sells tobacco under a business license is required to have a particular endorsement. So, you know, Fred Meyer's has one business license, but many tobacco endorsements for each of their locations. Here on slide nine, you'll see the business license revenue deposited into the general fund back through 2017. We're sorry, it was challenging to go back to 2014 like the rest of the numbers. Many of you are familiar that the state switched accounting systems, and so reaching back into that old system can be a little bit harder. But you'll see here the gray bars on this slide are the revenue from business licensing in those past years, and then the blue bars represent the approximate lapse amounts into the general fund. And so those gray bars are approximately what we are projecting will be generated through this. So if you have seen the fiscal note for this bill, you'll see that we're projecting additional revenue generated to be about $2.7 million. And then we do just have a slide. If you're interested in checking out some of these numbers, you can find them on the various websites. And with that, we are happy to answer any questions.
Hey, go with Representative Fields first. And,
thank you, through the chair. If I guess I don't have a great sense of how much money will go into revenue for the state generally versus additional capacity for inspectors, but if you were to put all $2.7 million into additional staff to help with some of the agencies where there's a bit of a backlog doing license processing, how many staff positions could that support? Do you have a great sense of kind of how much we might be able to speed up processing of a nurse license, just to give an example? Thank you.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Fields. That's a great question. Unfortunately, the way the statutes are currently written for professional licensing, that is separate from business licensing revenue. And so professional licenses under AS 0801065, we are required to charge an amount for those professional licensing fees that is approximately equal to the cost to run the program. So as statute currently exists, we're unable to tap into this revenue to support those programs. But I am happy to report that last year the legislature granted us 12 additional positions. And so as we get those filled, we are encouraged by improved processing times.
Can I ask a follow-up? I would then wonder through the chair if this bill might be tweaked to allow some of these additional resources, if they were available, to augment what people are paying for within their own professions to address those needs of businesses. Thank you.
And what you would be describing, Representative Fields, would be a fee, whereas this is, I believe, a tax. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the commissioner, I guess, I believe I heard maybe Sylvan say that this is simply restoring business license levels to pre-COVID levels. So it did not drop from 100 to 50. Now we're putting it back to 100, correct?
Through the chair, this is not pre-COVID. This is actually 2008 levels. So I'm not sure who at the time it was, but it was reduced. And so we're bringing it back to the 2008 levels.
Follow up? So back in 2008, it went from 100 to 50. Now we're going to go from 50 to 100. Mm-hmm. 2008 was, let's see, a number of years ago, 12, 14 years ago. Is there any reason, I hear a lot about inflation. Is there any reason that the fee would not be addressed a little higher to account for that time frame?
Through the chair, if I could. We were very careful to look at other states. So, comparatively, and as a business owner, I can tell you it's not going to be the change from 50 to 100 or even to 150 that's going to cause me to decide not to go into business, if I'm being completely frank. But at the same time, really wanting to be mindful of the sort of the micro businesses or very small businesses. And as we were polling people out in the communities and in each of our conversations, and comparing ourselves to other states, we really felt that 50 to 100 to potentially someday maybe 150, we're pretty comfortable in that ballpark, but we thought the very first appropriate step would be to just take it back to where it was in 2008.
Okay. Follow up with me. So 16 years, okay. And I guess I have to, the fiscal note raises a little bit of a question. The revenue anticipated to be raised is static throughout the 5-year period of the fiscal note. And the fiscal note says something to the effect that the increase is based on the increase in previous years. And I'm not sure if that presumes, the fiscal note would seem to imply that there's going to be no growth at all in the number of fiscal licenses. So if you can actually predict project the amount of business licenses and know it to be zero, the fiscal note would make sense. But if you don't know how much you can predict the growth, then I would think that would be an indeterminate fiscal note. Just help me understand the projection and why you think it's going to stay static.
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, part of it is that fiscal notes don't typically take into account inflation. That's just kind of one of the rules of fiscal notes. But additionally, you know, as you mentioned, we would have to project the increase in business licensing that we anticipate into future years. And that is something that would be very challenging to do. Obviously, there can be a number of factors that might influence that. Certainly, you know, we just went through a global pandemic and we all know the effect that had on a number of businesses. And so the division is loath to, you know, overstate the potential for this. So we felt a more conservative, we'd rather kind of underpromise and overdeliver, as it were.
Okay. If I may?
Go ahead.
Yeah, on the fiscal note, it says the change in revenue in this fiscal note, which means additional money raised, is a conservative estimate based on the average number of new and renewed business licenses sold in 17, 18, and 19. So my point is, why wouldn't you just, I'm not quite sure why it is based on that. That would imply a rate of growth as opposed to the total number. Why wouldn't you just predict the fiscal note based on the number of licenses, the most recent date, 2023?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, to address your first question about why did we use those prior years, during the pandemic from April 3rd, 2020 through January 31st of 2023, business license fees were waived during that period to acknowledge the challenge that businesses were undertaking. And so we felt that that might be artificially influencing the number of business licenses that people got. And so we wanted to ensure that we were using numbers that demonstrated what people were willing to pay for, since that will be the case going forward. As to your question, again, we have seen an increase in business licenses over the last number of years. As recently as FY21, there were just 91,000. In FY23, we had just shy of 100,000 business licenses. So I think your point is well taken, that it would not be unreasonable to consider that the state may see additional revenue as those years progress.
Okay, thank you.
I won't push it. Thanks.
And we have Conrad Gunther with Legislative Legal Services online. I think we asked him to maybe give us a brief comparison of what would be considered a fee and what would be considered a tax. And I don't know the answer to that question, but... Mr. Gunther, if you could.
This is Conrad Gunther from Legend Legal. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, fantastic. So I'm not aware of any Alaska cases that distinguish between a fee and a tax, but generally my understanding is that a tax is a levy of funds to raise revenue for general government purposes, while a fee is voluntarily incurred. It's a voluntarily incurred charge that is used for to obtain a government benefit, with fees that generally relate to the benefit, the cost of the benefit that is incurred by the government.
Thank you, Mr. Gunther. So in your opinion, if a proposal was made to double what is described as a fee with all of the additional revenue flowing to the general fund, could that be more properly described as a tax?
Well, while the budget isn't generally my area of expertise, you know, we're generally generalists over here. My understanding is under Article 9, Section 7 of the Alaska Constitution, any proceeds of a state tax or license can't be dedicated. They, you know, go to the general fund. So I don't know that that distinction alone would be enough. I am aware of some precedent in other cases, in other courts, where if a fee is overly excessive, that could be it. But again, I don't have enough information here to really understand the cost of the department, you know, the purposes of why this money is being raised. It sounds like the staff here from the executive branch can kind of speak to that a little bit, but Those would be some of the issues that would be looked at. But again, there's not really enough information here for me to distinguish between the two.
Okay, thank you. Representative Brox.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. Through the chair, should we charge a licensing fee to get a driver's license or to register a vehicle? And I've always thought of that as a tax. And is this similar? Or have you thought about this in terms of the same thing as a driver's license? Whether it is a fee or a tax, I don't know.
Through the chair to Representative Prox, certainly if Ledge Legal is not confident to opine on whether this is a fee or a tax, I'm not qualified to do that. But I would note that the reason that we refer to it as a business license fee is that is how it's outlined in statute that creates it is referred to as a fee. Additionally, in AS 43.70.080, the legislature spoke to the fact that the money collected by the department under this chapter should be deposited into the general fund, which would seem to indicate a realization that additional funds would be generated beyond what's cost required to run the program.
Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. You had made a statement earlier about the fee increasing not having a detrimental effect on the number of licenses issued, but then it seemed to indicate that the waiving of the fee during COVID maybe caused more licenses to be issued. I didn't know if there was a possibility to discuss where you think that line is. What's the number where people say, nope, too much, not starting a business? If that's a position that the department or division has looked into at all.
Through the chair, Representative Ruffridge, certainly I'm sure economists could debate the elasticity of the price of a business license and where that's going to impact people's decision to start a business. It sounds like perhaps I misspoke earlier. Part of the thinking through raising the revenue for the initiatives that Commissioner Sandy spoke of is that it doesn't hit any particular industry. So rather than, motor fuel tax that might hit others differently or other sorts of increases as ways to generate revenue with 100,000 business licenses, it's a fairly even way to define that increase. So apologies if I was not clear earlier.
Thank you. Representative Prox, did you still have a question?
No, thank you.
Nope. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, looking at the, I'm not sure who wants to address this, but looking at page 3 of your slides, it says, quote, increasing business licensing fees is a way to generate additional revenue without heavily impacting one profession or industry. And the gentleman online from, I think, from Revenue just said that if a measure is designed and intended to raise revenue, it's a tax, but if it's a fee, it has to be just to cover the cost of the benefit. And then on slide 9, I see that looks like the blue line there represents the cost of the program, and the delta between the blue line and the gray line is the what lapses. No, I'm sorry, no, it's the blue lapses. So I guess the slide indicates that a fair amount of money does lapse back to the general fund. Doesn't that mean that the money raised is more tax than fee? If it was just a fee, it'd be the same, or as close as you can get it. Just help me understand why this is a fee and not a tax.
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, again, the department has referred to it as a fee. The creation of it in statute does refer to a business license fee. As I noted, there is statute that indicates that the excess funds generated should return to the general fund, which I certainly don't want to speak for the intention of a former legislature, but would seem to indicate that they may have anticipated that the cost of business licenses would exceed the cost to run the program. But it seems like certainly a semantics debate that we could get into for some time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, and thank you. And sometimes semantics can be important if certain legislators have signed a pledge not to increase taxes. Are there any other questions? No? Okay. Seeing no other questions, we will set this bill aside. That concludes our business today. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:14 p.m.